And welcome to Open Dialogues, the podcast by Open Dialogue. I am Maike, your host.
Hi, everyone, and I'm Ronald, your other host.
And today we're so very lucky to have Hillary with us. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, everyone. My name is Hillary Black, and I am a conversation designer. I am also a marketer and the head of marketing and conversation design at MAV, which is a digital assistant primarily on SMS for sales and growth. And I also have an online course that is writing for chatbots. I am the creator of the Facebook group Conversation Designers Internet Club. I am the founder of conversationdesignerjobs.com and also the Daily Conversation Design Challenge, which Daily UX Writing Challenge. So that is my actually shortened version of all the things that I do. But primarily, I would describe myself as a conversation designer.
Wow, that was a very long list. Like, how do you get all of that done in just so many hours in a day? It's beyond me. And Hillary, I know you've been around in the conversation design realm for quite a while now. Your Facebook group was actually one of the kind of first communities I found on conversation design a couple of years ago now. What was it that brought you into conversation design in the first place?
It's very interesting. I was just sort of reflecting on the previous year yesterday. And so I had started my Facebook community in 2018, and you were the first member of the group, which we had realized, you know, a few last times when we talked. So I appreciate you being an early member of my community. But I got into conversation design in, I believe, like late 2016. So around the time that Facebook announced Messenger. And my background is actually in digital marketing and social media. So I had been working for a variety of different brands and agencies for about 10 years in social media. And then my last position was at Vine, which is the now dead social media app. So after that, I had no job and I decided to go out on my own and freelance as a social media consultant and sort of like a content creator. And so one of my clients, which is who I actually work with now, at the time we were an agency called Black Ops. And they said, hey, one of our customers told us about this thing called chatbots. Can you figure out how we can make one? So I worked with them as my technology partner to create it. And we just designed a horrible experience of a chatbot at the time. But that was my first time that I ever had any type of design experience in that way. But I took sort of my background as someone who would write content for social media and just applied it in the same way. So you're trying to elicit a response from people and how can you get them to want to engage with you and interact with you, which felt very natural to me coming from that background. So I'm surprised that I don't see as many people have a social media background when they are becoming conversation designers, but I think it sort of works. So from there, we just continued on and we actually switched our entire business from being more developing mobile apps and websites to chatbots specifically. And we kind of went all into that, eventually evolved into a product company. But so that was like halfway through, I guess, my journey in conversation design was when I started my Facebook community, because like you said, at the time, there weren't really places for people to gather that I could find. And I was like, I don't know really how to do this. I have sort of taught myself how to do this. Where can I find other people who know more than me? And where can I meet other people who do the same thing that I'm doing?
Yeah, very interesting. So I find it interesting to dig into your marketing background and a bit of chatbot use cases, because obviously one of the use cases for chatbot that you see very often is customer service or finding products. And I was wondering, actually, kind of where do you think best use cases lie? Are there kind of specific marketing and lead generation, for example, examples that come to mind and that you think are valuable being conversational versus traditional?
Absolutely. So I actually don't do any customer service experiences, and we really have never operated in the customer service space. mostly because it's incredibly difficult to do that. It's incredibly difficult to implement those types of solutions, which at the time was happening on Messenger. And now, like I said, we're doing SMS. So it wasn't something that we felt like we could really integrate ourselves very well with. So we always went towards customer acquisition. We went towards the sort of personalization of like shopping experiences. We went with, you know, how people can acquire new leads, especially with the marketing side of it, being that you could have a specific ad type within Facebook Messenger to acquire leads and direct them to your chatbot. That was sort of like our early use cases were all about, let's do a lead gen ad, but instead of it going to a landing page, it's going to a chatbot. And then the person can sort of get qualified for their service. They can, you know, learn more about it and they could get a quote. One of our earliest customers was a company called Haven Life Insurance, and they still are one of our customers today. And they developed this way that people could get a personalized quote for life insurance using their chatbot. So that is sort of where we started. And then now we have gone fully into the full, I guess, sales funnel and like the full life cycle of a customer. So that would be anything from first point of contact, outreach, a lead generation, qualifying people, and then also the nurturing aspect of it. So you can follow up with people, you can schedule meetings, and you can sort of be in that top and middle of the funnel experience versus what happens after someone becomes a customer. And then they're in the support section where no one is happy. I like to sort of be in the space where people are excited to interact with you and they really are willing to give you more information than they would be if they have that very short fuse of being customer support.
I love that distinction between let's work in the happy place and leave there. Can you tell us a bit more about, I'm intrigued by the move to, if it's a move to SMS as a channel versus Facebook Messenger. And obviously there was that whole initial excitement with Facebook Messenger and Facebook bots. Like, can you tell us a bit more about how you see the difference between the two channels and, you know, preferences, what people should be thinking about?
Yeah, so we still have, I guess, the capabilities of doing Messenger, and through Messenger can support websites through like the extension. So you could embed a Messenger experience on your website. But what we have found is SMS will forever be my favorite channel, and I don't really want to go into the others anymore because you're doing something that is like an owned property. Your phone number is your owned property. It's not, you know, a chatbot that might go away someday or that you have to deal with sort of how Facebook wants you to do things. You can do everything on your own. But unlike, you know, an app-based chat, people don't have to download anything. And then not to mention SMS and the messages app is the most used app on the phone. So it's something that you're getting into your customer's inbox, and the open rates are 98% for SMS, and the response rates are, you know, 1 minute to 3 minutes versus an email, which might have an open rate of like 30% if you are lucky. And, you know, Messenger, I think they were really leaning on the push notification aspect of being able to re-engage your customers. But I do think that the persistently open nature of an SMS conversation, we see people come back to our experiences months after, just because we sent them a message, hey, are you still interested? They're going to go back into it. And it's just a lot easier for people to pick it up and put it down. So you can continue to engage them if they, you know, say they were driving and they stop responding to you, or they, you know, are messaging you on your website, they have to go to a meeting, they just close the browser. With SMS, you can continue to have those conversations with people for as long as you want. So I think that that's really cool. And while it is not something that is robust as Messenger, it doesn't have all of the design features, it doesn't have, you know, a lot of images, carousels, quick replies, you have to sort of design all of those yourself, unless you're doing something like WhatsApp. I do think that it is so much more powerful to be in that specific app on someone's phone.
I love that. I think that's a really strong argument for why people should focus more on SMS. And really, the majority of people we talk to are not thinking about SMS that much. They're thinking about web chat, yeah, Facebook, voice, obviously, and so on. So you talked about design challenges. What would be your 2-minute summary of those for someone that's moving from something like web chat, where they have a lot of flexibility, or Facebook Messenger, into SMS?
Yes, my 2-minute debate over SMS being the best channel for people to be on. The biggest challenges are any of those features that you would have in a traditional chatbot, you don't have in SMS, and you have to create them. So you have to create, if you want to utilize buttons or quick replies, you have to create them for the user. And this is sort of an experience that most people, when they think of these automated SMS messages, they think of like the text blast, you know, reply Y to subscribe, and they send you coupons. And that's not a conversational experience. So creating these new habits for people is something that is a bit challenging, that you see kind of early on with people even using a chatbot on a website versus a live chat. So I think the carousels, cards, images, and any media send a lot slower than text. So that's something that we just don't send. And then with websites, you also have access to all of the content within your entire site that you can push to your bot. And that also doesn't exist in SMS. So you can link someone to something, but then as soon as you do that, they're gone from your experience. And so you wouldn't necessarily want to do that. But the benefit that you can do in SMS, I don't believe you can do in any other channel, is you can call the person. So you could send them a link to initiate a phone call, or you can call them. So that's something that, you know, it's a different type of more traditional channel, but I think that makes it fun to design on.
And when you say call, do you mean as a person calling the potential client, or automated voice to follow an SMS message, or both?
I mean, I think you could do both. I am more talking about if you are getting qualified for a service through a business, you could be texting with them and then you're qualified. It says, you know, call us to, you know, continue this conversation, to sign up, whatever you're doing. So you could have a link as sort of your end to say, you know, click this link, and then it will pop up the phone and dial the number. Or what you can do that we have done with a lot of our customers is you can port the phone number of the business to the text. So you could have it be the same number. So you can just say, you know, call us at this number that they're already texting you at, if you have a 1-800 number or something like that.
Cool. What would be a long conversation over SMS? How many messages would be exchanged?
Well, a long conversation and time period, I know I had mentioned it could go on for several months. That's not the goal, obviously. But I do think that it probably, I typically recommend, you know, no more than 10 questions. We've had customers do anything from 2 questions to like 15 questions. So it's sort of, how are you structuring your message? We typically have people reply with like A, B, C, D versus having to type in their entire open response. You could do that. It just depends on what are the questions you're asking. Is it for their name, or is it for their budget to buy a house? Like, those are very different things to type for the user. So a lot of, you can get away with more questions and more message exchanges if you're only having them reply with a letter.
Have you compared the, I'll just call it multiple choice, kind of ABCD versus open language, or is there no need to kind of run side-by-side tests? It's people will are more efficient with just a set of choices.
People are more efficient with a set of choices, but everything that we do includes both. So you can't have someone reply with a letter choice if you're asking them for what state did they live in, what's their zip code, what's their name, what's their email. So you can design around things like all of the examples that I mentioned. you can ask the question in a certain way that the answer will pop up, especially on an iPhone. If someone has their own address stored or their email stored, it will suggest it and they can just tap it. But we do typically have to have people reply with certain types of text, but we also accept open input. So if a person, if we say reply A for yes, B for no, and a person replies with yes, obviously we would understand that they replied with yes. So it is operating in the background, which I think is very common for most choice-based bots.
So I find this very intriguing. And so I wonder if you'd compare kind of a similar experience in what might be more natively conversational, like a web chat or a messenger versus on SMS. Would you think that the drop off from the experience would be similar, or like, or would the drop off in SMS be bigger? How do users perceive the SMS experience? I guess I'm asking, do they find it something they are willing to engage with, like the bigger majority, or is it considered as more intrusive?
As far as my experience has gone, people enjoy it more because the alternative to SMS typically is the alternative to a phone call, not to a web chat. So every person would prefer to text than to talk on the phone, I think. And every person would prefer to learn and know about a service and know if they qualify through a message versus through a phone call. But the other difference would be between, you know, any like realtor or something like that, text their customers. A lot of people do that. But we have found is that people are more willing to, disclose isn't really the right word. People are more willing to be more honest about their situations as it regards to like financial services. So debt consolidation, things like that. People are more willing to say the truth to something that's automated versus something that is a person texting. Or if you think about, if you go to a doctor, you're typically going to kind of exaggerate what you're talking about. But if you are filling out a form, you might be more honest. So I think that for one, you know, the drop off is a lot less because we are able to retain those users through re-engagements. So the drop off will always be less than a website chat. Unless you're like capturing that person's email, you might get in the email with them, you might not. But I think that it's more about sort of what you're replacing. So we're replacing online forms, we're replacing phone calls, and we also are replacing the awkwardness of texting a stranger by having it be something that's automated. And we see a lot of, you know, completion rates on that. We see people are willing to go through the experiences as long as they're short-ish, I guess. So it's definitely something that I have been more impressed with the results versus Messenger.
Yeah, great to hear that. On a totally different topic, unless Ronald, you had another question about the SMS world.
I have a lot of questions about the SMS world, but I have other questions as well. So let's move on to a different topic.
Yeah. So on another topic, obviously, we have just rung out the past year and are looking forward to the next year. And while this wouldn't be a New Year's podcast, if I didn't ask you, what are your predictions for conversational AI in 2022, Hillary?
Oh, oh my wow. goodness.
Easy.
That's a big question. I think that a lot of my predictions are sort of driven by the things that I've seen since we got into the space, you know, in 2016, 2017, 2018, until now, is that it has grown so much just in terms of the amount of platforms, the amount of technology advancements, the amount of conversation designers. That has all really exploded in that time. But I think what happened in the last 2 years is that people started to find it normal to be interacting with businesses and brands online through automated systems. And so that has done us, while it has done the world like a huge disservice, and you know, obviously we're not in the best place in the world right now, it has done conversational AI a big favor by sort of fast forwarding not only companies wanting to buy into the technology and then wanting to kind of save money, do more with less, make more things automated, but it also has made users accept it a lot more. So I think we're only going to see increase in spending by companies wanting to invest in the technology. We're going to see a lot more people transitioning into the field. But what I hope the most is that we see the team start to assemble around this technology in what we probably would say is the correct way of having the resources you actually need to create an engaging and conversational experience, but that people are going to want to have that and they're going to hire conversation designers, they're going to invest in strategy, they're going to invest in the technology so we see good experiences come out of it as opposed to bad experiences.
So another kind of related question, really, which I wanted to ask you before we kind of postponed this podcast. So let's kind of rewind back to the past a bit and pretend the holidays hadn't happened yet. As a conversation designer, like, what would you want as a gift for the holidays under the conversational AI tree, something that kind of you haven't found so far that frustrates you? Like, what would it be that you'd ask?
If I could have the perfect conversational AI tool from Santa, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, well, the perfect, I guess, tool and also situation is I feel like it's a little bit broken right now to communicate all of these things between designers and the technology team to be able to explain not only what the copy and the dialogue is, but to be able to explain what the experience is and how it should function technologically is something that's really lacking right now. And I think, and that's what, you know, as I want people to invest in the technology aspect of it in 2021, I hope that we can get a bit more like deep into it and not just say we're going to, you know, develop better AI models, we're going to make new conversation design platforms. There's a lot of problems that have sort of emerged that we need to solve. And it's both in that, how can you actually communicate how these experiences should be formed? And how can you communicate that to your customers in a way that's not overly complicated, like I just explained it? And then how can you measure it and actually show the analytics of these conversations so that I could be sitting here and giving you guys, you know, all of the percentages of how many experiences have been better than previous ones and, you know, how it is better to be using ABC versus open input. And these are all things that are kind of like hanging out there, but there's not really a place and a like formalization around them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That is something that I also find to be true. I don't know how you find it, but I find it especially difficult to find numbers, results, bots that are still alive after a couple of years.
Yeah.
So I think that's also due to the fact that we in the past couple of years have been testing and learning a lot. But I think it's time for baby bots to actually grow up now and to.
Yeah. Kind of,
and I always wonder, is it the fact that bots disappear? Is it related to the fact that it were our experiments and now we've learned something, therefore we don't need that experiment to be out there anymore and we're going to create something more robust in the future? Or is it more of a been there, done that, didn't work for me, goodbye? Yeah, I wonder where that lies. Perhaps is it the transition between something being an experiment, something being living with the innovation department and then having to move to another department and that handover not going smoothly? Like, what has your experience been in that kind of field?
I think a lot of it is the pilot nature and what you're saying of things being developed in the innovation departments. And what we saw early on, which was, you know, the unfortunate 2016 to 2018 of bots when all these articles were coming out saying they're bad and people having horrible experiences. And we all know that. We know that we weren't at our best in terms of, you know, delivering an experience that customers could rely on. And so I think that probably the more enterprise level brands who said, we're going to run this pilot, we're going to try a few use cases, whether that's within our customer support or that's within, you know, a new like personalized service or something like that. You know, I think of a lot of the cosmetics brands that tried to launch these, you know, very robust sort of inventory experiences. And then they either flopped horribly or they sort of just ran their course and they were saying, what does this now mean for our future of our conversational strategy? So I think that it could be that we haven't yet seen how people are going to come out with these experiences or how conversational AI is going to be informing their greater user experience for their business. But I think that a lot flopped, unfortunately, just due to the industry being so new, due to people not truly understanding how these experiences should be created. And instead of saying, let's sit down, let's, you know, get an entire team, let's create this entire, you know, conversational AI team, or we're going to put this into UX, no one really knew where to put it. And so it kind of just died. I think of all the ones, you know, there's those lists of 100 bots that you should try. And, you know, you click on the links and half of them don't work, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
I think that resonates with my experience in that, you know, there were experiments, there was a lot of enthusiasm, but like with any digital experience, it's not going to just magically keep being around and so on. And it's part of human nature, right? Like now it seems obvious to say, well, how did you think you're going to continue to maintain this bot? And did you really think that AI is magical and this bot will just keep doing things on its own and improving on its own? It needs, like anything else you're running, any other service you're running, it needs all the infrastructure around it. But it also feels that we're past that now and organizations recognize that. And it's more about, okay, how do we put that team in place? And what you mentioned before, Hillary, around how do we get that conversation between client, designer, developer, and so on, be more smooth and clear so that people can actually move forward is fundamental.
Yeah. Well, do you think that, you know, these experiences are, it's better that they're not around anymore, or that it sort of, I guess, stunted the development of the industry as a whole? Because I think that we have a lot of people, and I'm sure you do too, come to us saying, like, we're in this mess, we try to do this thing, can you help us fix it? Can you make this actually work how we wanted it to work? So I wonder, you know, are part of people doing that? And are you glad to see those sort of bad experiences, as we're calling them, or experiments sort of be gone now?
For me, yeah, I think it's better they're not around because they just give the whole industry a bad name. Like the fewer bad bots there are, I would rather someone interacts for the first time with a bot because there weren't any other bots around, but it's a good interaction, rather than a continuous series of negative interactions, for sure. And yeah. Michael, what about you?
Yeah, so I'm in agreement, and then again I'm not. So I'm in agreement in the fact that yes, if there are bad bots around, unfortunately, a lot of the time an entire industry gets judged based on one single or two single interactions with one single bot, and then it's like, oh, I don't like chatbots and I will never ever use one again, although the next one could actually be a very good experience. So that them not being around anymore is probably a good thing. But then on the other hand, there's this like little part of me that says, well, if we just kind of pull the plug on something rather than trying to fix it and improve it, it's kind of, we're all always starting over and over and over again. I'm kind of worried that we then kind of don't take the learnings from what doesn't work. Because if we just pull the plug, then obviously we won't be like monitoring all the things that could go wrong. And we can then also, in the new thing that we replace it with, have issues that we thought weren't issues, but because we were not monitoring the bad experience that much, we haven't really learned. So it's like I'm kind of in between two things. Like from on the one hand, from a user experience point of view, I'd like to have them be gone and not be around anymore. But then from a curious researcher learning experience point of view, I'd kind of like to see how we could kind of improve them rather than just pulling the plug, I guess.
So I have a question to the founder of a conversation design community and the first member of that community, which is it's amazing, which is directly related to what you just said, Mike. So from when was that? 2018 to now 2022, so a good 3 years in between. What do you think were the key learnings for the conversation design community that you were struggling with in 2018, but now are, you know, solutions are there and you know what you need to do? To start with.
That is such a big question. And I just, as you're asking that, I was trying to sort of put myself back in the things that I thought in 2018. And I don't know, of course, I want to give myself credit and say, oh, it wasn't me that was lacking. It was the technology and it was the tooling. Because as we know, back then, there were not 100 different design tools. There were not all of these open source frameworks for people to develop on. There were not all of these solutions. So there were only the simple ways that people could sort of hack things together. So I'd like to think that it's that. However, I do think that myself as a conversation designer, I have become a lot more trusting in the technology. So I have become a lot more willing to have things be open versus my belief in the past was that things are only able to be rule-based. And I don't know, well, I don't think that that was the entirely right way to go. However, at the time, it was almost the only option. And so we had that. And I think that we didn't really know yet what types of use cases were going to work out the best. So we were making, you know, I used to make chatbots that were purely meant for just engagement, which is not really useful to the user at all. So I think starting to understand the needs of the user is something that as someone who does not have a UX background, I have become a lot more aware of. And so that's something that I think just as my own self, developing and learning those new things. But it really is a lot of learning from other people, these, you know, tutorials, these stories starting to emerge, all this education starting to emerge. And then also just the advancement of technology in general, the advancement of the awareness of the general public of, you know, brands and businesses knowing about this technology and seeing the value in it. That was like, back then, that was the hard part. Getting people to even understand what the heck this was the hard part. And now the harder part is them saying, we need this to be perfect and it all needs to work and it can never fail ever. And that was not the opinion back then.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
That kind of resonates a lot. There's so many things, right? And I know Hillary and I talked a couple of weeks ago, just informally between us. And one of the things that we touched upon was that because back in the day, it always seems so long ago, but it's not that long, right? But right. Back in the day when we started a community after kind of playing around with chatbots for a year or so, I came across our community, which was great, but it was the only community that existed at the time. Like I was constantly on the lookout for a place to talk to people about conversation design and couldn't find anything. So when I actually found Hillary at Youth Internet Club, I was like, yay!
Yes, even if there were only like 10 people in the group, it was, and I was the same way. That's, you know, why I made it is because it's like, How do we do this, right?
So that has definitely evolved because now you can kind of, there are internet websites that directories of events in the conversational AI space. There's at least one or two or three webinars you can go to every single day if you want to, which is just crazy, like how much that has grown. and how much more events and how much more people are interested in conversation design. And then that's definitely something that has changed, and it helps us learn one from the other. It's a very friendly community. I found it to be one of the friendliest tech communities, to be honest, out there. And other than that, I think thinking and skills on the conversation designer end have also evolved. And that is a good thing, because I found that when we started out, a lot of the things that we were doing, and you could hear about it and read this in articles, it was all about chatbot personality. It was all about happy parts. And I had at the time this intuition that conversations were not happy parts. And I even coined the domain name nohappypart.com at some point. I've gotten rid of it. I did, like, I think it was back in 2017-18 where I said, I'm going to do this whole thing around the fact that there are no happy paths, there are only kind of flows that users want to go through or need to go through. But I didn't have the confidence then to say, like, you shouldn't be thinking about the happy path. Because if you have just such an emerging space, right, I'm happy to see that other designers and people are thinking along the same lines and are kind of breaking away from that mental model that we kind of somehow painted ourselves in a corner in with. And that I find very exciting. And that are things that you can kind of only really value or evaluate even once you've done a few enterprise level use cases, once you have seen the complexity of data sets that you need to work with. And obviously it's also not something that you learn lots and lots about when you kind of start with introductory courses in conversational AI. It's not because, as you say, the tech it can't do it. It's because we need to be able to fathom the complexity of it and be able to hold it in our minds, right? And so starting with a small portion is always kind of easier, I guess.
Cool. So Hilary, if you were to, well, you may well be, but if you want to hire a conversation designer today, what is it that you would look for?
Well, that is a very interesting question. And I'm trying to not be clouded by the fact that I look at a lot of job descriptions for conversation designers every single day. And what is most interesting about them is that they all are incredibly different in the qualifications that they're requiring for people. But I think in general, and this is likely because it's my background, I don't feel that you have to have all of this experience, and I don't feel that you have to have this, you know, perfect degree, and you have to have, you know, this perfect like set of technology skills that you know. I think that it really comes down to the curiosity and the general desire to only advocate for the user. And it is like a bit selfish to say, you know, you're going to sort of ignore the business needs and advocate for the user always. But I think whatever comes across, whether it's a person, you know, has a background in psychology, or they have a background in UX, or they have a background in screenwriting or anything like that, as long as you can apply that knowledge to this user experience and you can have this genuine curiosity, I do, as someone who did, I truly believe you can learn it on your own, and you can with time become someone just like me, because that's what happened to me. So I think that, you know, having this curiosity and sure, understanding the technology aspects of it, but I don't personally believe that conversation designers need to know how to code. I don't believe that they need to know Dialogflow. I think that every business has different needs, but if I personally was hiring, I would not require a person to have those technology skills, because it's an incredibly different set of skills. It's not the same thing. And so asking, you know, a designer to code an entire website is not something that we do. So I don't know why we're applying that same thing in conversation design. But yeah, that's sort of my very loose qualifications, and like I work at a startup, so obviously we have loose qualifications, but that's sort of, you know, what I think I would look for in a person. And whatever background you have, just figure out how you can use that to your advantage for this.
That's really, I agree with that. I think I kind of feel like I'm in that space as well. Like I didn't know conversation design until I got interested to join the space. So I think that the space is at that point where the, I don't know if we will ever get to the point where there is a conversation design degree. Well, actually, I think we will get there because it's growing and it's scaling. And then inevitably you're going to get to the point of, we already have some sort of certification. You probably get to the point of degrees and so on. But where it is right now, I think you're right. And if I compare it to computer programming, which has been around for a much longer time, but still today you can enter that space just as long as you're curious and you want to dig in without necessarily any formal qualifications behind that. Having said that, one thing that can find it interesting with you working in the space of SMS and contacting people directly on their phone, and you know, there's also stories around phishing with SMS. And do you think there is some sort of need for code of conduct for? I think there's something incredibly powerful with the fact that you're designing conversations, and conversation is the most direct way to connect with a person, and that creates obligations as well in terms of how you're going to treat that person. How do you think about that side of things?
Well, there are laws. So there is TCPA compliance. So there is a compliance aspect of it that is going to involve, you know, the phishing and sort of the way you're contacting someone, the information that you're requesting. It's more around your first point of contact with a person. You know, they have to double opt in order to receive the communications. But it's the same as how no one really reads, you know, the fine print on anything. So I do think that people need to be careful with their information. I am not operating in the space where we're doing anything sort of transactional that would involve any secure information. But if I were to be doing that, you know, I would have it through a secure form or some sort of message extension that would allow someone to input that information. But in terms of, you know, the way that conversation designers operate, I do think that we could benefit from, you know, a set of standards or a set of sort of rules that are things that are, you know, for or against the law, but I'm not sure how something like that would really be implemented aside from things being, you know, in the state of California where I live, it is against the law to pretend that you're a human if you are actually a bot. You have to disclose that it is an automated system, but that's only in one state in the entire world. So I don't think that that's how it is everywhere. And I'm sure that there are a lot of places in the world where things are not as clear. And I know in other countries, they don't require opt-in for businesses to text people. So if you live somewhere, any business could be texting you at any time and you have no idea how they got your phone number and you can't opt out of it. So there are instances like that, which I think are, you know, incredibly risky, but I think that we certainly could benefit from adopting sort of standards globally that would prevent those types of things.
I think the law in California makes a lot of sense. And I also agree with you that it's good to have code of conducts and standards and good practices and so on, but it has to end up being the law. Otherwise, how do you define it or enforce it? And it would certainly save us a lot of conversations where we're trying to explain clients, look, it's not a good idea to pretend that that's a human being. If you can just say, yeah, no, I'm sorry, it's the law. And you have to say.
I know, exactly.
Yeah. I'm aware we're coming up on time. Mike, is there anything else you from your?
I'm fine. I've already kind of. I'm now so very excited about SMS all of a sudden, which is probably yeah. not a good thing for our developer team, because that means things are coming their way. But
yes, I'm so glad to hear that. That's sort of my mission every time I have any of these types of conversations, because it is like we're really the only company who is doing conversational SMS this way. And even, you know, in the US. So I just think it's very powerful. And I think we will start to see more of it. Obviously, it's inevitable. But it's always my wish that people are just curious and, you know, want to try it and want to see, and that you will start to evaluate the text messages that you receive. So the automated messages you receive, you'll just start to think about, you know, who made this? And it will sort of be that same spark that we had back in, you know, 2016, when there were chatbots on Facebook and we were like, how do you make this? You know, who made this? So it's a very fun space to be in.
I think that's a great note to end things on. And yeah, he definitely signed up two more people on your SMS.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Hillary, for being with us for this Open Dialogues episode. And we'll talk to you all later on the next one.
Thanks, everyone.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.